Parshat Mishpatim, Wednesday morning, Chaf Beis Shvat. Parshat begins, Vela Mishpatim Asher Tassim Lifnehem. So Rashi already points out, it doesn't say, Ei Leha Mishpatim, these are the ordinances, these are the laws, but rather, and these are the laws, Ve'eleha Mishpatim. Which Rashi points out means that we're building off of the previous Parsha. We're not saying these as opposed to that. We're saying, and these are the Mishpatim Asher Tassim Lifnehem. So what's the significance of these? That this is in addition to the previously stated Aseret HaDibros and all that followed. So the Netziv, from the Stalei Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, points out the following. That last week's Parsha Yitzchak Yisro ended with the words, "B'chol ha'makom asher askir et shmi, avo lecha birachticha." It's talking about the korbanos. Mizbach adamata asali, v'zavachta alav. You shall make an altar, and on that altar you should bring the korbanos. And where you bring korbanos, avo lecha birachticha. I will come to you, and I shall bless you. Now comes along the Netziv and says, "Ve'eleh mishpatim asher tassim lifneim." If you're talking about a place of blessing, blessing is not just when it comes to korbanos, avoda sheben adam lamakom. Blessing is also mishpatim. These mishpatim, when you read through the parsha, you'll notice these are all laws that are ben adam lechavera. How should I interact with my friend? What happens if I accidentally damage my friend? What happens if he should damage me? If you lend somebody money, if he lends you money, if you borrow, if you hit, if there's a heavy wagon, unload. All of those laws, those two, social justice too, is a vehicle for relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We often fall into the trap, we spoke about this a little bit in Shalosh Shiras stuff. We often fall into the trap that saying, yeah, mitzvahs that are ben adam lamakom, those mitzvahs that I do like tefillin and korbanos and things of that nature, that's where God blesses. But social justice, that has, yeah, God commanded it, but it has nothing to do with God. And that's not true. Even social justice has everything to do with God. Right? The example that we can give is sometimes, let's say there's a certain girl that fancies your eye, that you're attracted to, and you want to get her attention, and she happens to have a younger brother that she adores. So what are you going to do? You're going to play with the younger brother, right? You'll take him out to the park, you'll toss the baseball with him, the football, whatever it may be. But you know that you're not just doing it because you're interested in having a catch with this guy, with this little brother. You're doing it because you're interested in having a relationship with the boy's sister. That's exactly the way you should be viewing Mishpatim also. There's social justice and it's important, but it's not just because it's social justice. You have to recognize that the social justice is also a vehicle to relate and get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. While we're in that first pasuk, Chaf Aleph Aleph, Asher Tassim Lifnehem. What does that mean, Tassim Lifnehem? You shall place in front of them. So on this two Rashi comments. What does Rashi comment?
That not before non-Jews?
Yeah, no, except for that one. That's the Lifnehem. Asher Tassim Lifnehem, Rashi says, Amar La Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, Lo Ta'ala Al Da'at Chalomar, don't let it enter your mind to just say, listen, I'll just teach it to them once, twice, until they know it by heart. And then, that's it. Genug. No, he's saying, Tassim lifnehem, put it in front of them. Lahavinem tahamea davar. Let them understand why they're doing it also. It's not enough to just, he says like a set, it's not enough to just tell them the halacha. They also have to understand why. To do things by rote, again, no matter what, even if we never have an understanding of why we're doing a mitzvah, it's irrelevant. We're going to have to do the mitzvah. But we should strive to understand why we're doing mitzvahs also. We should strive to understand generally why we're doing mitzvahs, and within each particular mitzvah, why is this a mitzvah? What does this mitzvah teach me? Like Rav Gavertz was here last week, 2 weeks ago, with the Shatnez. So he tried to understand why Shatnez is a chug, but still he gave a nice explanation of why it is that we do Shatnez. Remember, Kain Hevel, pishtan and wool, when they mix, it's sometimes dangerous. Oh, so that helps, because when you just do things and you don't understand why you're doing them, eventually your desire to do them and your ability to do them is compromised. You might not want to do it, and then when you don't want to do it, even if you do it, you won't do it as well. But when you have an understanding of what you're doing, then you can't begin to compare the enthusiasm with which you approach it and the reason, right? If your teacher says to you, do this, alright, do that. But if he explains to you why it's important to do that, then oftentimes you're inspired to do things more. And that's an important lesson for us, to strive not just to learn the halacha, but why? There's a beautiful Sefer on the shelf called the Sefer HaChinuch. What is the Sefer HaChinuch? He took all 613 mitzvahs that are written in the Torah, right? And each one he describes what is the mitzvah. And in addition, he gives a shorish, the reason why we do the mitzvah. And he writes, the reason why he did this is because he felt that it was hard for people to keep on their observance without having a deeper understanding of why they're doing. The deeper understanding is often important, and we should strive to together. Sometimes when we're finding difficulty doing a mitzvah, so the answer is not to give up the mitzvah, but the answer is to study more about the mitzvah. If a person's struggling with tzitzis, so he reads Arya Kaplan's tzitzis book. It's filling, so he reads again. There is a reason behind it, and we should strive to understand it. Don't give up on it, but rather strive to understand it. Okay. The first mitzvah that we have in these mishpatim is the mitzvah of Eved Ivri. The mitzvah is Kisikna Eved Ivri. When it is that you purchase an Eved Ivri, right? Then Sheshanim Ya'avod Uvashvid Yitzelach of Shichinam. 6 years he shall work, and on the seventh he shall go free. If we're already talking about Tamei Mitzvahs, let's talk about this one for a second. A couple of years ago, there was a break-in. There was spades of robberies in Ramat Beit Shemesh, and we weren't living here. We were living up the hill, and our house was broken into as well. It was, you know, you feel awfully compromised and violated and unsafe. You call the police, file a report. And then, I should note to you that for the next 3 months, my wife slept with every single light in the house on. She was terrified. So now, imagine the following scenario. Let's say the next day, after the break-in, I were to go to the police station, but next week, and the police say to me, listen, we got good news and bad news. The good news is, we found a thief. The bad news is he sold everything, he's already spent the cash, he's got nothing left. So what's the halacha now? What happens? Assuming he was a Jewish thief. So what happens now? He can't afford to pay back. That's exactly how he becomes a slave. Ki tikna eved ivri. Right? How is it that Yonikness Rashi says it? Because he steals and he can't afford to pay back. So imagine if I would have come home and I'll be like, honey, good news. The guy who broke in last week, he's moving in for the next 6 years. It's a little bit odd. What kind of a system is that? We never think twice about it. We're like, yeah, he stole something, he should be my slave. But if you think about the circumstances, what do you mean he should be my slave? I'm afraid of this guy. He came, what kind of a derelict is that? I don't want him living in my house for 6 years now. It's a little bit of a strange thing. So Rav Yudin from Furlong, New Jersey, gave the following explanation once, and this is Rabbi Yudin, who's a righteous and tzaddik person, does mamash befitting him. He says, it's not a punishment for the thief to come live with you. We're not interested in punishing the thief. We're interested in punishing you. Why is it you, the owner of the house? Why is it that there's a thief on the street? Do you really think he grows up and he says to himself, what do I want to be when I get older? And this is before the age of television and corruption and ghetto culture. But do you think a person, a normal person, a healthy person, does he grow up and he says, you know, I really want to be a thief when I get older. I really want to break into people's home, live by the skin of my nails, and just, that's what I want to do. Nobody does that. Why does he turn to a life of thievery? Why does he turn to a life of crime? Because he's desperate. Nobody has given him a shot. Nobody has given him a chance. Nobody has showed him love. Maybe had you shown him love, maybe had you shown him compassion, had you invited him for a meal on Shabbos and said, come sing Zmiris with us, come have some food with us, and you try to help him, maybe he wouldn't have been in the situation where he's turning to a life of crime. This is a rehabilitation, not just for the thief, to come and give him a warm house for 6 years. It's a rehabilitation for you as well. This is what you need to do. You need to go out and seek people, help people, be compassionate towards people, and end the cycle of crime by doing this. That's what the Torah is teaching you. He becomes a thief, so for 6 years, you're going to rehabilitate him now. And if anyone knows Rabbi Yudin, he knows that this is what Rabbi Yudin does. He mamish. People are constantly at his house, constantly living there. He's warm and open to everyone. Another din about Eved Ivri. The Torah says the following. 6 years he works, and then the seventh he goes free. However, if he is inclined, if he's so inclined, after 6 years he can choose to say to his master, you know what? I kind of like it here. I want to stay. Right. So what happens if he wants to stay? The Baal HaBayis says, okay, we can do that. But first, there's a little bit of a ceremony we have to do. What's the ceremony? We take him to the doorpost, we pierce his ear, and then he can stay, not forever, but he can stay until Yovel. The question is, why do we pierce the ear? So Rashi comments on that as well. What does Rashi say? Rashi says we pierce the ear because this is the same ear that didn't listen to the Lo Tignov. And since it didn't listen, right again, how did they become a slave? What did we say? He stole. Can't afford to pay back. So now he becomes a thief. Since this thief did not listen to the commandment of Lo Tignov, do not steal, now we're going to pierce his ear. Two questions on that, Rashi. Number one, when did the theft happen in our chronological timeline? Right. How long ago did this theft happen?
6 years.
6 years ago. So why didn't we pierce his ear 6 years ago? Number two, those of you who did Rashi and the Parsha last week, Lo Tignov, and that's Erda Dibros, what is it talking about?
Kidnapping.
Do not kidnap. Right? Rashi says, well, do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not covet. Those are all talking about nefesh. So the Lo Tignov has to be talking about nefesh also. Don't kidnap a person. So it has nothing to do with this guy. Elamai. So what's the answer? Beautiful, beautiful vort from Rav Yake Kielis Jeshurun. Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab says the following beautiful report. Rav Schwab says, if you think about it, when you kidnap a person, what are you doing? Right? Why does the Torah call it don't steal? Don't kidnap, it says don't steal. Who are you stealing the person from? Are you stealing him from his brother? From his sister? From his family? Not really. They don't own him. Right? Who are you stealing him from? You're stealing him from Hashem. When you kidnap a person, you're curtailing his ability to serve Hashem properly. Right? For example, when Hamas kidnapped Gilad Shalit is not from, but had he wanted to serve God, he wouldn't have been able to. Right? He didn't have tefillin. They've curtailed his ability to serve God, to eat kosher, to daven with the minyan. All of those things were, when you steal a person, when you kidnap a person, the reason why it's called Lo Tignov is because you're stealing him from Hashem. So now, explains of Schwab. 6 years ago, when you committed the crime, you didn't violate Lo Tignov. You stole money. That's not a violation of kidnapping. But what happens? As a consequence to that monetary act of crime, what did you have to do? You had to pay it back. So what did you do? You enslaved yourself. But now you're free to go. And what are you choosing to do instead of going free? You're choosing to remain a slave. And when you remain a slave, what's going to happen? By definition, you're making it harder for yourself to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're enslaving yourself. It means you're stealing yourself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because your ability to go to minyan will be compromised, because you're going to have to serve your master. Your ability to learn will be compromised. Your ability to do whatever it is you want to do to serve God will be compromised. And therefore now, 6 years later, guess what? You're not listening to Los Signos. You're kidnapping. You're kidnapping yourself from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's service. You're stealing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is why 6 years later you're not listening. 6 years ago you stole. But you stole money. That's not what it says in the Seder Dibros. That's fine. But now, 6 years later, if you're choosing to stay, then there's a problem. Okay. There's a famous pasuk in this week's Parsha. The pasuk is, an eye for an eye. Correct? Eye for an eye. You guys heard that expression? Sounds like it should be a James Bond movie. It probably is. Right? And Perakav Aleph, Pasuk Kav Dalet, it says, Ayin takas ayin, an eye for an eye, Shein takat shein, tooth for a tooth, Yad takat yad, an arm for an arm, Regal takat regal, etc. So the Gemara learns, though, that this doesn't literally mean an eye for an eye. It doesn't mean you poked out my eye, I'm going to poke out your eye. What does it mean? It means, what?
Compensate.
Yeah, compensate him financially. We're going to see how much he was worth with two eyes, and how much he is worth now with one eye. And that is what we're going to have to compensate and pay him. So if with two eyes he's worth $19 million, and with one eye he is worth $17 million, we're going to have to pay him $2 million. Those numbers are completely random, by the way. Question is, though, how do we know that? All right, so Chazal tell it to us, but is there also a hint to this in the Torah? So the Gra wanted to say that there is a hint to this in the Torah as well. What's the hint? The hint is the following. If you really wanted to say an eye for an eye, literally, then it would have said an eye for an eye. Ayin be'ad ayin. An eye for an eye. But it says an eye takas ayin. What does it mean, takas?
Under.
So it says the Gra, let's look at the letters of the word ayin. Ayin takas ayin. Then look under the ayin. If you take the letter under ayin, Yud and Nun, right? So if you spell out the Aleph base from top to bottom, Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet Hey Vav Zayin Chet Tes Yud Chaf Lamed, right? So what letter is under the Ayin? Samach Ayin, right? Pet, correct. And if you take the Yud, what letter is under the Yud? Chaf. We're lining it up from your. That's before my. Right. We're not doing the before, we're doing the when you're lining it up from top to bottom. So under the yud is the chaf. And under the nun is the samach. So again, what letters do we have? Samach, chaf, and pei. What letters are those? If you mix the letters around, you get the word chesed. What word did you say? You would also get that. Abetach is spelled with a ches, but you're right. You would get that also. But in Yaneinu, the way you know that it's monetary compensation is because it says ayin takas ayin. So if you look under the ayin, you get to the chesef. Right? It's not an order, but it's those letters. When you line it up from top to bottom and you look underneath the ayin, you get pei, chaf, and samach. Letters spell out chesef. Okay. Let's go on. Let's talk about lending money a little bit. By the way, this week's parsha is the shortest pasuk in the Torah. Chav Beis Yudayin Macha Shefalo Techiyeh is the shortest pasuk in the Torah. There are other psukim that are three. There is other psukim that are three words, the three letters, but I think three words. But this is the shortest in the amount of letters. if I recall correctly. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, chronologically, before we get to lending money, we have Pasuk Chaf Aleph. And Pasuk Chaf Aleph says, Kol almana v'yatom lo ta'anun. All widows and orphans, do not oppress them. Im ane ta'ane oto, if you shall oppress him, ki im tsa'ok itzak elai, and he shall scream to me, shamoa eshma, I will hear tsa'akato, his cry. Now this pasuk is a little bit weird, pasuk chavez. Ane ta'ane, tsa'ok itzak, shamoa eshma. Double language. It could have just said, im ta'ane oto, ki itzak elai, eshma tsa'akato. Why does it say, im ane ta'ane? Tsa'ok itzak, shamoa eshma. Why the double language? So, Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky once gave the following explanation. He demonstrated it with the... He said that when you have a person who is regular living his life, somebody, let's say, puts a kick me sign on his back, which you should never do. You torment this person and you put a kick me sign on his back, and then somebody kicks him. So he says he feels horrible. He feels beat upon. He feels bullied. He feels terribly ungood about himself. And then he cries out. However, if this same person that you put the kick me sign on is also an orphan, then his pain is double. Because he thinks to himself, if I had a father that I can share my pain with, if I wasn't living alone, this would never happen to me. So every time you beat him, every time you hurt him, every time you bully him, you're causing him double pain. It's not just the act that you're doing right now, but every trauma makes him re-experience the trauma of having lost his father, the trauma of having lost her husband. If it's a widow. Which is, this would never have happened if my husband was still around. So every trauma she experienced, it's not just a single trauma, it's ane ta'ane. Every time you're ane, anytime you torture him, for lack of a better word, it's ane ta'ane, you're torturing him double. And tsa'ok itzak, and he will cry out, not just a single cry, a double cry. And says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shamoa eshma tzaka, so I will hear both cries, and I will act upon it. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets very upset about this. If we shall chas v'shalom do something like this, v'chara api, I will get angry. V'hayu nasheichem almanos, your wives will be widows, your children will be yesomim. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very angry for such behavior. You cannot take advantage of the disadvantage, and certainly, right, when each trauma that they experience is a double trauma, such as a widow.
How about the reverse?
That's also wrong, but that's a single cry. You should not be, you don't have to be, well, he's disadvantaged, so it's okay. You have a right to act and to cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu or to tell him to please stop. However, that's a single cry. But the Torah actually, in a few places in this week's parsha, says, warns about that. Do not favor the disadvantaged. Right, do not root for the underdog just because he's the underdog. Sometimes you might want to say, well, he's a rich guy, he's a poor guy, so I'm going to rule in favor of the poor guy because the rich guy can afford to give him the $10,000 and the poor guy can't do that. The poor guy owes money, then you have to. Okay.
Which, who was that?
That was Chaf Beis, Chaf Aleph, and Chaf Beis. Okay. In this is Pasuk Chav Dalet now. If you shall lend money to my nation, et ha'ani imach, to the poor who is with you, to the poor person who is with you. So, the Gra gives over here advice as to how to be Mekayim mitzvahs. The mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to lend money. Says the Gra, im kesef talveh et ami, when you want to lend money, im kesef talveh, when you want to lend, then it's et ami. The word et in the Torah means with. Right? For example, at the beginning of Sefer Shemot, it says, et Yaakov ishu v'tovah. With Yaakov, each household came. Et means with. Sometimes you'll walk in the street and you'll see a truck that says, Yaakov et Shimon. You know, movers, Yaakov et Shimon. What does that mean? Yaakov the Shimon? Et means with in fancy Hebrew. Law offices are called, you know, like Smith et Smith. Et it means with. So im kesef talveh, when you want to lend money, make sure it's with ami, with the nation there, meaning have witnesses. When you lend money, you're supposed to have witnesses. However, et ani, when it's dealing with poor people and you just want to give them tzedakah, imach, that should just be with you, between you and yourself. Giving money should not be a public showcase. Hey, look at me, I'm giving a $10,000 donation to this poor guy who can't afford a thing. It should not be that way. It should be privately, secretly. You should not necessarily know who you're giving to, and certainly the poor person who's getting should not necessarily know who's giving to him. It should just be quiet, etc. So in kesef talveh, when you're choosing to lend money, that should be with witnesses. But it's et ani, when it's just with the ani, you and the ani, then it should be imach. It should just be with you. Just you and him, privately. Nobody should know about it. Okay. Weiter. An important hashkafic lesson and life lesson. Parak Chav Gimel, Pasuk Hey. This will be the last one we do for today. Parak Chav Gimel, Pasuk Hey. There's a lot to be said on this pasuk, and I'll give you one more. Et ani imach, the poor person is with you, right? In kesef talveh ani et ami imach, in that last pasuk, the Kli Yakar says that when you give a person tzedakah, when you help a person get off, you know, financially, and you help put him back on his feet, then he's imach, he's with you. That means that every single mitzvah that he does, you have a share in as well. It's imach. So says the Kli Yakar. Okay. Anyway, pasuk perek chav gimel pasuk hey. Kiterecha morsa nacharavetz tachad mesao. When you shall see the donkey of your enemy, rovetz tachad mesao, crumbling under the weight of its load, vechadalta meazov lo, shall you not help him? Azov taazovimo. Surely you should help him. This is an odd pasuk. Number one, it's odd because it says chamor sonacha, the enemy of that person who is your enemy, whom you hate, who you do not get along with. Right? Normally the Torah describes people as kitira chamor re'acha ohavecha, which is in fact the way it states it later on in Sefer Devarim, in Parshas Ki Tetzeh. So that's odd number one, that it says sonacha. Odd number two, the pasuk is asking a rhetorical question. V'chadalta me'azov lo? Should you not help him? Azov ta'azovimo. Certainly you should help him. Why does it stick in the rhetorical question? Should you not help him? Should you not help him? It should have just said, when you see your enemy's donkey crumbling under his load, help him. Why does it say, when you see your enemy's donkey crumbling under his load, should you not help him? Certainly you should help him. Why does it stick in that rhetorical question? So the Baalei Mussar explain, many of them explain this, they say the following. Right? The word ahava, the word love in Hebrew, is related to the word, right? What does ahava mean? Yahiv in Aramaic means to give. The definition of love, right? I love a person not because I get things from him, right? I don't love you because you give me, because you give me this or I get that from you. No. The reason why you love a person is because you give to that person. The more you give to a person, the more you're going to love him, right? The reason why your parents love you is because when you were a little young baby, right, in the middle of the night, you would cry and they would get up and change your diaper. And when you were 2 years old and you scraped your knee, you would cry and they would clean off the blood and they would comfort you and cuddle you. And when you were 5 or 6, they took you to school and they invested and toiled a lot. They gave you so much. They see so much of themselves, of their investment in you, that they can't help but love you. The sure way to love a person is to give to a person. If sometimes you struggle and you're like, I really don't like that guy, then what you should do is, you should give him things. You should do things for him. And when you begin to do things for him, you will in fact begin to like him. Right? Same thing over here. You see your enemy's donkey under his load. And at that point you're asking yourself, should I help him? Right? Why should I help him? He's my enemy. The minute you're asking that question, why should I help him? That's exactly the reason why you should. That's exactly when you know, azov ta azov imo. That's exactly when you know that you should help him. Because the minute you're saying to yourself, I don't want to help him, I don't like him, the only way to get over that hump and to start liking him is azov ta azov imo, is by helping him. You have a roommate that you don't get along with so well? Thing to do is not to wait for him to give you some sort of gift and apologize for having kept the light on last night and not letting you sleep. No, the thing to do is to say to him, hey, listen, can I get you breakfast in bed this morning? Right? You have somebody that's bothering you. The way to do things is to do for other people. And that is how we'll increase love in Klal Yisrael. It's a nice word, but more than it's a nice word, it's an absolute truism. One that's hard to live by, but one that is important to internalize. Alright, we'll stop here. Next week, we'll be another parsha.